the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Associated Press's emergency motion for a temporary restraining order against myself, our Deputy Chief of Staff, Taylor Budowich, and our Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles, for our decision to remove the Associated Press from the White House press pool for certain and special events. The judge's ruling, upholding our decision to deny the Associated Press such privileged access, reinforces the truth. And it reiterates what I said from this podium last week when that suit was filed.
Judge not granting a temporary injunction or TRO, that's not the same as the judge siding with you. You have to meet a certain standard of expectation about the future outcome of the case, usually in order to get those kinds of emergency orders. So this is not the end of the story on whether the AP is going to win the lawsuit against the White House to get access to the Oval Office or to Air Force One. So it's a bit of an overstatement by a statement by Carolyn Leavitt. But yeah, remember, we've kind of been talking about this. And just to clarify my own view on this, I thought that the Trump administration punishing the AP for refusal to say Gulf of Mexico and instead, or for refusal to say Gulf of America and instead saying Gulf of Mexico, was stupid but not unconstitutional. It was definitely a response to their speech, which the AP says is a violation of their constitutional rights. I just don't think anybody's entitled to access to, I agree with Carolyn Leavitt that nobody's entitled to access to Air Force One or to the Oval Office. Loads and loads of other media outlets would love to have the access that the AP has been taking for granted all these years. And so the fact that they're making, a change, nobody has a reason to complain about that, even if the reason is a bad one. So something can be, you know, lawful, but stupid. Something can be constitutional, but wrong. And I would say all of those things kind of apply here. The lawsuit says that, you know, you're punishing us for speech, therefore it's a violation of our First Amendment. Again, I just don't really see it that way. But she talked about this in the press conference the other day.
Asking the President of the United States questions in limited spaces, such as the Oval Office and Air Force One, is a privilege that unfortunately has only been granted to a few. It is not a legal right for all. The Trump administration has already proven to be the most transparent ever, and this president, the most accessible in history. This is evidenced by President Trump's daily press conferences in the Oval Office, where he takes many questions from the journalists who have the honor and privilege of standing before the beautiful Resolute desk.
You know, can I tell you, just one of the little things that started to get on my nerves early in her career is too much cheerleader, not enough information. Too much, which in some ways you could say is a very Trump-esque way to represent the White House, right? She is the spokesperson when the president's not speaking. She's there to speak for him. So in some ways, if she were just more of a journalist, she'd be a very poor representative of the president. But I don't know, all the kind of the flourish sort of stuff I could do without. But because it's the White House press conferences historically often, not always, been in the direction of, all right, let's talk honestly with each other here. You know, like it's the news people asking the press secretary things, and we all know the press secretary is forced to answer according to a certain line, but they don't have to answer a certain way or in a certain demeanor. You know, being feisty is fine, but being the, as you all know, this president is the greatest that has ever breathed air. You know, like that kind of stuff is, again, it's a fit for the Trump White House. It's not exactly a fit for the White House press secretary historically.
The president and this entire White House are committed to ensuring the American people continue to receive this same level of historic transparency, access, and visibility. In fact, we want to double down and give even greater access to the American people. We want more outlets and new outlets to have a chance to take part in the press pool, to cover this administration's unprecedented achievements up close front and center.
Oh, the unprecedented and the greatest ever, blah, blah. Okay, no, but here's where I do agree. If they had come out and said, you know what we're doing? We think that the historical alignment of access with media and the White House is not a good reflection of the current media landscape, of the people of the country who really want information, or frankly, of the people that we view to be the balancing side of traditional legacy media's bias against Republicans and this president. And so we're changing it in order to make the balance more fair. If they'd have said it that way, honestly, I'd probably just plain support them in this. But punishing AP, retaliating against AP, because AP wouldn't go along with this absurd renaming of the Gulf of Mexico, it's just the dumbest, pettiest, stupidest-looking thing ever. So it's a matter of why you do it. You know, what you do is important, but why you do it is also important.
Just like we added a new media seat in this...
Oh, sorry, this one.
As you all know, for decades, a group of D.C.-based journalists, the White House Correspondents Association, has long dictated which journalists get to ask questions of the President of the United States in these most intimate spaces. Not anymore. I am proud to announce that we are going to give the power back to the people who read your papers, who watch your television shows, and who listen to your radio stations.
Well, they may not read the papers much anymore.
Moving forward, the White House press pool will be determined by the White House press team. Legacy outlets who have participated in the press pool for decades will still be allowed to join, fear not, but we will also be offering the privilege to well-deserving outlets who have never been allowed to share in this awesome responsibility.
Again, the flourishes. No, but this is, I think this is right. This line of thinking about it is accurate. And I was talking with my wife about this the other day, and she made a comment. She said, how many voters in the United States of America do you think even know what a newspaper is? Like, I mean, seriously, how many people under the age of 30, if you just had to guess, have never even read in print a newspaper? Have never held a newspaper? I mean, think about it. Have never bought a newspaper at a stand? Have never had a newspaper delivered to their door? They read articles online, okay, surely. They didn't get what they really wanted from TikTok. But, you know, but the touching of the newsprint, like you see in a TV show or a movie, the, you know, person sitting at the breakfast table, sipping coffee, eating the, well, I guess these days, in those days it would have been actual eggs, and these days it would have been something without eggs. you know, but reading the morning paper, learning what's going on in the world. I think your average 30 and under, that's just ancient history. That doesn't even make any sense to them. That's not something they've ever done. I mean, for example, I actually thought this at one point because we had kids of just the right age where this is starting to be a thing. When they were young, we did like paper mache, you know, do the volcano, make creatures, you know, coat hanger wire, which also doesn't exist much anymore, form it into a structure and then build a, you know, a Tyrannosaurus Rex out of a coat hanger and paper mache. Where would you get the newsprint to do paper mache? You know, that's a loss of arts and crafts material. I mean, they're out there. There are newsprint, but you know, it's kind of hard to get or ridiculously expensive. The in-print version of the PNJ is what, like $3.75 for the daily? I mean, it's, you know, it's nuts. So anyway, just there's definitely some truth to the idea that if you really want to balance the access of the people to the White House, bringing in non-traditional outlets, you know, other than TV and newsprint and, I hate to say it, but radio, you know, going to online, that really makes a lot of sense.
As you all know, for decades, a group
of... Excuse me.
Just like we added a new media seat in this briefing room, legacy media outlets who have been here for years will still participate in the pool. But new voices are going to be welcomed in as well. As part of these changes, we will continue the rotation amongst the five major television networks to ensure the president's remarks are heard far and wide around this world.
Who's the five? ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox. Who's five? PBS? CNN? C-SPAN? Like, I honestly don't know. I don't know who she intends as number five.
We will add...
You mouthed something to me, PJ. What was your suggestion? Who's
CNN.
Number five? CNN? I mean, I guess. Okay. I mean, I. Okay. All right. I guess.
We will add additional streaming services, which reach different audiences than traditional cable and broadcast. This is the ever-changing landscape of the media in the United States today. We will continue to rotate a print pooler who has the great responsibility of quickly transcribing the president's remarks and disseminating them to the rest of the world. And we will add outlets to the print pool rotation who have long been denied the privilege to partake in this experience, but are committed to covering this White House beat. We will continue to rotate a radio pooler and add other radio hosts who have been denied access, especially local radio hosts who serve as the heartbeat of our country.
Yeah, again, if this had been the story, like if it just didn't have anything to do with the Gulf of Mexico, I'd have been like, yeah, this is good. This makes sense. You're democratizing access. You're not just saying that because it's always been the AP, it needs to continue. Now, AP is not like a... AP is not a thing that way. AP is a collection of... I mean, you know, like the PNJ journalists are, I think, part of the AP. I mean, AP is kind of a weird one to include in all this category. But anyway, last comment from her about this.
This administration is shaking up Washington in more ways than one. That's what we were elected to do. As I have said since the first day behind this podium, it's beyond time that the White House press operation reflects the media habits of the American people in 2025, not 1925. A select group of D.C.-based journalists should no longer have a monopoly over the privilege of press access at the White House. All journalists, outlets, and voices deserve a seat at this highly coveted table. So by deciding which outlets make up the limited press pool on a day-to-day basis, the White House will be restoring power back to the American people who President Trump was elected to serve.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I will tell you the one thing about the White House press conferences, though, is now that they're adding in conservative lean or heavily conservative or sympathetic news voices, you are getting a lot more questions like, hey, Caroline, I heard that the president did this really amazing thing in the Russia negotiations. Can you tell us more about that? You know, kind of like when you listen to the congressional hearings and it's the, you know, the Democrats are, you know, trying to find out what you did wrong to your mom in the third grade. And the Republicans are trying to tell you, you know, how you almost helped carve out Mount Rushmore. Like it's this ridiculous political exercise. The press conference is leaning more that direction these days. But given the historical anti-Republican and certainly anti-Trump lean of the media, I'm not sure that it's so inappropriate. But anyway, so I support these changes in general. It's really just this hugely ridiculous, petty, Orwellian. If you won't say my words for the, you know, Gulf, then we're not going to let you have the access you've historically had. 437-1620, 437-1620. One other note I wanted to... I wasn't particularly thrilled after I went home yesterday with the way I covered the Gulf Coast gun story in Channel 3. And here's why. Instead of focusing on, like, why the bank did what they did or why the inventory was seized, I had mostly, like, I had basically woken up and watched the statement from Chris Smith. And so that was kind of in my head, and I was just kind of reacting to that, and that's why I played a lot of his clips. But I think in the process, I think I gave maybe his version of the story a little more credit and didn't give maybe enough credit to the basic news reporting that the PNJ and Channel 3 did about why this all happened, and, you know, maybe gave his, like, we did everything right, this is a surprise, they're anti-gun, Channel 3's bad. And I didn't mean to, and if I did, I'm sorry. I was thinking about it after. I'm like, I don't know. Tanner Stewart, actually, who's a good friend, and he's a very good journalist. You know, Tanner had put up a post on social media in which he kind of said, I got sent out the door in the middle of our meeting Tuesday morning to go check out a heavy law enforcement presence at a gun shop. Sheriff's office says gun shop inventory was being seized by a bank. Bank number one says the gun shop owner was in default on a loan for more than a year. Documents justify that. Bank number two says, okay, we'll take that off your hands and buy the loan from bank number one. That seems to be the case. You know, bad debt is what it looks like. Bank number two says gun shop owner doesn't respond to any communication or appear in court. Documents support that. Bank number two then asks judge for a court order to seize $580,000 worth of inventory. Gun shop owner goes on Facebook Live and essentially says it's a big misunderstanding. The loan was in good standing the whole time. You don't typically get to seize people's inventory when that's the case. Court documents very clearly prove otherwise. This was outlined in my coverage yesterday. Moral of the story, according to many of your kind notes, he's being sarcastic. According to many of your kind notes, I'm apparently now a raging liberal, crying smiley face. Make it make sense. Yeah. I mean, the documents show what they show. And even the claim about how Regions Bank was biased against gun shop owners, Regions Bank issued a statement saying that absolutely was not the case. Any claim that Regions made a decision based on guns or politics is not true, Regions Bank. If you just look at the history of the, you know, the notes and the documents, it just looks like, you know, fell behind on the payments, was, you know, sold off to a debt collector. They exercised a balloon payment penalty clause probably in the contract that Chris Mayer may not have realized was in there in the documents he signed, and that's it. It's a bad story. Doesn't speak of any criminality or any immoral behavior or anything like that. And of course, you know, Chris goes on and talks about how everybody's out to get him, and I don't know. I allowed my reaction to his comments to kind of dominate without maybe presenting enough of the sort of the evidence here. And I apologize for that. And I certainly thinking about Tanner's coverage of it, which was very good. And, just the PNJ also, and the basic facts of the story. If there hadn't been a, you know, sort of failing on the part of Gulf Coast Gun, none of this would have happened. I don't have any problem with Chris. I would buy guns from him. I'd buy ammunition from him. That's just not the issue. So anyway, I thought about it a little bit after. I thought, I don't know that I really covered that story as fairly and accurately as I should have. So I apologize for that. 526 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Our daughter, Jessie, loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective, too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha! Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
The Pensacola housing real estate market has been crazy for the past few years.
How do you know when to buy or sell?
You'll need an expert to help you. Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 9 a.m. right after Pensacola Morning News to hear real estate expert Christina Leavenworth with Levin Rinke Realty discuss current real estate conditions. That's today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Ever have one of those days where your gut just feels blah?
Ugh, yes.
Occasional bloating or gas could be signs that your gut is out of balance, but Align Probiotic can help. Align 24/7 Digestive Support is a daily use probiotic with a unique strain to help relieve occasional digestive issues. It's the number one doctor recommended brand. So when you feel the signs, it's time to try Align. Align Probiotic. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Chip, I'm gonna come at you like a spider monkey.
Chip, you brought this on, man.
What is wrong with you?
Chip, I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew.
I love that.
I want to come at you like a spider monkey. Oh, 528 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. I am not the biggest Will Ferrell fan, but I will tell you that generally, if I go back and watch his movies, I'm like, oh, man, that's way funnier than I thought it was. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Andrew, have you ever seen Will Ferrell in a serious role?
Than Fiction is a fantastic movie, yes.
Okay.
You don't think so? Oh, wow, PJ, with the discordant view. All right.
I don't remember the name of the movie, but he played this one where he was, like, stuck on a mountain, and it was a very serious, in an avalanche with his wife or whatever. It was a very serious role, and it was just so weird seeing Will Ferrell not being ridiculously
jokes.
Funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
But a couple of
headlines. You don't like Stranger Than Fiction. All right, go ahead, David. Sorry.
Well, that's okay. I started this train in motion, so it's my fault. Veteran actor Gene Hackman has died at the age of 95. Police in New Mexico say Hackman and his wife were both found dead in their home in Santa Fe, New Mexico on Wednesday. Their deaths are currently under investigation, and they do say foul play is not suspected in that case.
And the dog. It's such a strange story.
You have to,
I guess, assume that it was some kind of a like carbon monoxide or gas leak or
that is the only thing I could think of.
Because otherwise, I mean, if it had been like, I hate to say it, but if it had been like murder suicide, that's murder. You know, like that's a crime, right? That's foul play. So it's just an awful story. Plus, he was such a great actor. Go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Absolutely. The head of the National Transportation Safety Board is blaming the pilot of the private jet for that near collision in Chicago at the Midway Airport earlier this week. NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy Wednesday said it was the fault of the Flexjet crew and not air traffic control.
Right. Yeah. No, it's and we listened to some of the audio of that yesterday. And yeah, that is what it seems like. All right, we'll be back in just a moment. Stick around. Thanks for listening. I'm Andrew McKay.
Fox News.
I'm Chris Foster.
Lex Luthor, the greatest criminal mind of our time.
The actor Gene Hackman there in Superman is found dead at his home in New Mexico with his wife and their dog. Hackman was 95. Betsy Arakawa was 63. He won a Best Actor Oscar as Detective Popeye Doyle in The French Connection.
All right, Popeye's here. Get your hands on your heads. Get off the bar and get on the wall. Come on, move. Move.
Police only saying so far there is no immediate indication of foul play. Chief Justice John Roberts pauses an order for the Trump administration to resume foreign aid payments. There was a midnight deadline. The militant group Hamas says it's ready for more ceasefire talks with Israel.
Hamas handed over the remains of 4 hostages in exchange for the release of more than 600 prisoners held by Israel, marking the final exchange agreed to in the first part of a truce that is scheduled to end this weekend.
Fox's Gary Baumgarten. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 51 degrees. It's partly cloudy this morning in Pensacola. An Escambia County man is facing charges for allegedly damaging statues at a local church. 47-year-old Robert Armstrong, he's charged with criminal mischief and remains in the Escambia County Jail this morning. He's accused of pushing over a concrete statue of Jesus and also damaging a statue of an angel at the Little Flower Catholic Church.
This gentleman, he wanders around a lot. We've met him before. He doesn't speak. He doesn't talk too much. He's kind of an angry person. He's come on campus before and caused a little disturbance. But last night he came on and, you know, pushed over statues and destroyed our rose garden, some very precious items we had over there for prayer and devotion.
And that's Father Jack Campbell there. He tells Channel 3 the congregation is praying for Armstrong to get the help he needs. Church volunteers are working to clean that garden back up and to... The church says they are working with the sheriff's office on a safety plan. Well, state officials say the black bear population in the state has grown dramatically since the early 2000s, enough that they're now considering a statewide bear hunt.
Hunting should be the first tool considered for managing bears in areas where they're overpopulated.
That's Gary Lester with the FWC. Now, that possibility was discussed at a meeting in December. Officials say the population of bears statewide is more than 4,000. It's much less than that here in Northwest Florida, with about 120 that are known. If a hunt is approved, though, it would be the first in about a decade. The FWC is asking residents for their comments. You can email those to bearcomments@myfwc.com. The state's expanding its partnership with ICE to stop illegal immigration. Governor Ron DeSantis announced yesterday he's giving all 67 county sheriffs in Florida the authority to act as federal immigration agents. That allows deputies to enforce immigration laws in the course of their regular duties. The governor said if all states did that, the problem of illegal immigration would go away much faster and communities would be a lot safer. Well, SpaceX had a pair of launches overnight. One of them was carrying Intuitive Machines' new lunar lander that should land on the moon sometime next week.
2, 1, mission, and liftoff. Go, Falcon, go, Intuitive Machines.
And Athena is Intuitive Machines' new lunar lander. It's their second. Its job will be to help find water on the moon. Their first lunar lander was Odysseus. That touched down on the moon's south pole just over a year ago. There's another commercial lunar lander called the Blue Ghost, and that one also is expected to land on the moon within the next week as well. Republican Congressman Byron Donalds announced his run for governor of Florida this week. He's already got the endorsement of President Trump. Barry University's Sean Foreman says he's expecting other candidates to jump in that race soon, like Governor Ron DeSantis' wife, Casey.
She's going to run for this election. She's going to have to gear up and make that announcement pretty soon before Donald's gets all the momentum and all the attention and becomes a really strong front runner.
And on the Democratic side, there's no clear choice yet. Early possibilities could include Nikki Fried, Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava, and State Senator Jason Pizzo. It's 5:35. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
We are going to be looking at some clouds throughout the day today. 20% chance of a stray sprinkle, otherwise cloudy skies, high near 72. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 48. For Friday, we will have sunny skies, high near 68 degrees. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 48 degrees. On Saturday, looking at some sunny skies with a high near 70 and a low near 50 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And thank you very much, Brooke Richardson. Right now, we've got 51 degrees in Pensacola, 48 degrees in Milton, and 56 degrees reported in Gulf Breeze. Our next news at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. A Meta spokesperson said the company has fixed an error that caused some users to see content in their Instagram Reel feeds that should not have been recommended. It comes after users took to social media to complain about a sudden wave of recommended content that included violent and sexual imagery. NVIDIA's revenue in 2024 more than doubled compared with a year earlier, beating analysts' expectations. Moreover, the company expects sales in the current quarter to continue to grow at a faster rate than Wall Street's estimates. Much of that falls upon NVIDIA's new Blackwell artificial intelligence chip, which big tech companies are pouring billions into. Rolls-Royce, which manufactures jet engines for commercial aircraft along with power systems for ships and submarines, upgraded its midterm guidance. The company beat analysts' expectations for 2024 by posting a 57% increase in annual profit. Its shares surged 16% upon the news. Futures are moderately higher. That's Your Money Now.
The Key invites you to the 24th Annual Gulf Coast Renaissance Fair Wild West Roundup Pirate Fest this weekend at Five Flags Speedway. Come out, enjoy some historic fun. Eat, drink, and be merry while you're entertained by jousting knights, wizards, fire breathers, sword fights, pirates, gypsy dancers, cowboys, shootouts, falconry, and much more. Step back in time at the Gulf Coast Renaissance Fair this weekend at Five Flags Speedway, Pine Forest Road, Pensacola. Visit gcrf.us.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out this morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information this morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
Good morning, 5:39 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday we had a really good conversation with Kelvin Enfinger. He is a vice president at Green Hut Construction. He is also the state chairman for the Associated Builders and Contractors of the state of Florida. He was one of the people that had been on the expanded proposal for the Land Development Code Task Force in Santa Rosa County when Colton Wright proposed. It was his original proposal for 10, and then he wanted to make it 12, including the addition of Kelvin Enfinger. And then, you know, kind of on social media and with some very loud voices in the public, kind of all hell broke loose. The accusation was that the committee would be too biased towards home builders and developers. And, you know, they're going to vote on this today, the actual composition of this board today. At least I would expect them to vote on it today in the meeting this morning. But yesterday we had a good chance to talk with Kelvin Enfinger kind of about where this is all going and kind of where it's at. Kelvin, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Good morning. So there's been a lot of conversation over the question of whether this organization to review the LDC for a couple of particular questions leans too heavily towards the builders and the contractors and developers, or whether it's a representing the people's will or something like that. You were going to be on it, and now I guess you're not, unless somebody puts you on as their individual appointment. What's your thought about this process?
Well, I guess we'll see how it shakes out tomorrow. But Andrew, I think it's important anytime, whether a local government, state government, or federal government puts together any kind of, you know, task force or committee to review policy that affects a specific industry, that specific industry should certainly be well represented at the table. I think that we had a very well balanced group of people with the 12, you know, builder industry representing 25% of that. So I think that was a good, healthy balance to give industry, you know, a voice, a seat at the table to be able to have, you know, input into this task force, and find some common ground. I mean, I think there's some good people that's been appointed to this task force, and I think we can all work together responsibly to figure out what's going to be good for industry and what's going to be, you know, healthy for the community, and making sure that we're being environmentally responsible. I can tell you that our members and the majority of the builders you'll see out there are certainly environmentally responsible and want to see things done the right way. And I know there's been some things brought up about some bad actors recently. And I think if you talk to our members and even some of the members over at the HVA, they would tell you that an example of like what happened in ULAP Bayou, I don't think there's anybody that would tell you they would support that. And right. We've got to fix that. So we've got to do over, do better. But we certainly need to be well represented at this at the table of this task force.
Maybe just take a quick second, because I want to make it clear for folks. ABC and HBA, Home Builders Association, and Associated Building Contractors are kind of like the two halves of the construction development universe, right? What is the difference between them?
Well, Associated Builders and Contractors represents commercial contractors, subcontractors, and vendors. And so we're a national organization running about 23,000 members across the United States. That's, you know, broken down into state chapters, which I represent Florida now, and then we have five chapters in the state of Florida. And our region would be represented by North Florida out of Tallahassee. And we've got roughly about 150 members in North Florida. And those members, again, are just comprised of the commercial industry. And those members are building your hospitals, your health, you know, your healthcare facilities, your education facilities, your shopping centers, your grocery stores, you know, just a variety of anything that falls under the purview of commercial construction.
Okay. And then the HBA would be the other side, would be the residential construction. Is that basically the split?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. But again, you know, when you think about the difference between residential and commercial contractors is vastly different, right, in what we do. However, you know, it's important that we work in unison together, because when you think about commercial growth, business growth and new business opportunity coming to a county can't happen without rooftops. And so, again, it can certainly be done responsibly, but we need each other to be able to accomplish what it is we do for a living.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things about this conversation to me, because I totally understand the people who are very concerned about environmental damage, and what happened in Mulatt Bayou is awful. And I understand the people who are frustrated about growth creating traffic concerns. I totally understand that. But, you know, we all want more affordable housing. That means you're going to have to build, you know, more housing. And we all want jobs. And that means you're going to have, you know, businesses. And we want our kids to go to schools, and you build schools. And we want to be able to get medical service, and you guys build medical facilities. And, you know, it's like we all benefit from the things. You know, I go to eat at restaurants, which you built. And I live in a house that your organization, you know, not you guys, but the HBA. But, you know, I think of, like, where is the conflict here? And I'll tell you, when I'm listening to this conversation, I feel like bad builders and good builders all get lumped in together. And I also feel like people who want smart growth and people who just don't want any growth kind of get lumped together. And it feels like sometimes the loudest voices are the people who honestly don't want any growth, even if they say they just want smart growth. Am I misperceiving this?
No, you're 100% correct. And I can tell you, you know, there's a group of people in Santa Rosa County right now that's responsible for that public perception that we're all developers, all contractors, commercial contractors, residential contractors are all 100% the same. And the public's perception is that we're all evil and we're all destroying this community and we're being vilified. And that's really being headed up by one very small minority group of people that I will just say is disproportionately loud. You hit on that yesterday. I mean, let's call them the pitchfork, posse, as you refer to them. And that's exactly what they are. The truth is this group of people, they're not anti-growth or anti-development. At this point, I think they're just anti-business.
Kelvin, one of the things, and I, by the way, I kind of agreed from the beginning that I thought that a quarter to a third of a panel like this that is trying to regulate an industry, if the quarter to a third of that panel is from that industry, that only makes sense. You know, to me, that makes sense. I want them to have a seat at the table. Otherwise, it'll be war afterwards, and they're probably going to propose things that aren't really going to, you know, function effectively. So I want you guys in this process. But let's look at the other side. What are some of the reforms that you think really are necessary? I know Chairman Smith keeps talking about, you know, give me enforceable things. You know, you agree, I assume, that getting people to stop doing illegal runoff, unpermitted discharges, muddying up the, you know, clear cutting without any thought of the future. I mean, these are bad things, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, when you get into this, what we want to take a look at is how we can strengthen, you know, our environmental protection measures in the county. There's some counties that we can take a look at that are 100% doing it right. There's some that take it to the extreme, that overregulate and make it difficult on contractors, and that's not what we want either. We just want a fair, balanced approach to take a look at this and figure out what can we do from a clearing standpoint that's made in phase to help prevent, you know, some of this unmitigated erosion that's happening, like what we saw in ULAP. But again, that's a spinoff. That's a one-time situation that happened from a bad actor. So that's not a true representation of the construction community. But again, I think, you know, what we want to do is come to the table and have some valuable input from an industry perspective, and potentially, you know, show these. I've got a lot of experience from working, you know, throughout the Southeast. So I've seen how environmental regulations work in other states and other counties. And I think it's important that we just look at areas that's doing it right. And, you know, we don't need to go reinvent the wheel, but we can just take a look at those areas that have gotten it right, and we can play off of that a little bit.
The perception / allegation, stated or not stated, implied, is that builders and contractors and home builders want to stymie anything that the citizens are going to ask for. Obviously, anything that they're going to ask for is going to cost money to somebody, whether it's built into the end price to the consumer or whether you guys take a loss in profit or it takes longer, that's cost too. As a community of builders, are you guys willing to accept that it might cost some money to do some of these reforms, and you're willing to do that for the sake of the community?
Any time we look at any kind of policy reform in our industry, it ultimately costs money. It costs someone money, whether it's us or it's the end user. I think there's a healthy balance that we can come to the table, we can talk through this, and we can find some kind of middle ground of what makes sense. And quite frankly, I think there's some things that we can correct in this county that'll fix some of these issues that are policies that are already in place. So I think we just have to look more at the enforcement, and then we have to look closer at the bad actors. But certainly coming to the table with the understanding that there's going to have to be some give and take.
Yeah, and I certainly, you know, I still kind of hold out hope that maybe we can have a better mix and include you and the HBA in the panel. That, you know, you never know what they're going to do tomorrow. But at the very least, I assume you guys are going to be there for the conversation and have your input and try to, you know, guide it, even if it's from the audience rather than from the dais, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope tomorrow's decision is based on, you know, what's best for this community, what's best for our industry to have representation, and that tomorrow's decision isn't based off of political persuasion, because I think what we saw happen, you know, earlier this week, with taking the task force from 12 to 10, was nothing but a maneuver that was just based off of political pressure from a small minority group of people that are just simply anti-growth. They stand against growth. They stand against business. And I tell you, as a community, we need to be careful about that because we've got a great thing going. We've got five, commissioners that are working really well together. It's great to see the refreshment of all the arguing and the fuss and fighting that just died off from that board. And that's mainly in part because we got rid of one circus last November that helped greatly in that process. But I my concern is now there's another circus, and that's the Pitchfork Posse that has gotten a bigger tent since the other circus left town, and now they're screaming from the rooftops that we're just making bad decisions and we're moving the county forward in the wrong direction. That's just absolutely not true. I mean, we've got a wonderful thing going with our economic development department. We're seeing job growth. I want my kids and my grandkids to have a better opportunity in this community when they grow up, be able to stay here and have a job and, not have to go seek gainful employment somewhere else in the state or in the country. So I think we need to be careful when we look at these people. And I think the business community needs to come together and make a point that the people that go up there and say we the people or the citizens people is simply not a correct representation of what Santa Rosa County wants as a whole.
Yeah, the loudest is not necessarily the representative, unfortunately. Kelvin Engfinger, he is the Vice President of Green Hunt Construction. He is the current state chairman for the Associated Builders and Contractors of Florida. Kelvin, I appreciate there being restaurants and shops and malls and schools and hospitals and homes, to live in. So I appreciate what you guys do as developers and contractors. And I think we can do better, but I'm glad to hear that you guys are eager to do better as well. Even if it means some loss of money somewhere along the line, that's kind of the spirit that we're all in for the future of it. Kelvin, thanks for the time and thanks for what you do. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Somebody asked me the question, are you going to give equal time to the Pitchfork Posse? I do already in the sense that I play their clips. So, yes. By the way, equal time does not mean that I take a neutral stance on issues. Equal time just means that I let everybody's voice be heard. But also, I did actually reach out yesterday. I probably could have done a more aggressive job of it, but I did reach out yesterday to Dara Hartigan, who is the head of the Save Our Soundside folks, because I actually was hoping to be able to get her on this morning. It didn't work out. I probably could have been more aggressive about it, but I wasn't. But I will play her comments, because I thought, actually, her comments in the committee meeting on Monday, I hadn't had a chance to air them yet, and they were actually very much on point in their concern about the builders' presence on the task force.
And the mantra is, Save Our Soundside works to protect the community and the environment from the adverse effects of overdevelopment. Overdevelopment, not reasonable development. And Save Our Soundside was here advocating during the Land Development Code rewrite from August of 2019 through August of 2021, when developers had a seat at the table, went through the code line by line, we elbowed our way up to the podium on behalf of the citizens to make some points, and they were all cast aside because they were not in developer interests.
Yeah, and I sympathize with that frustration, and certainly I think under the previous board you were more likely to have that problem arise, whereas I don't think it's that same level of a problem under the current Board of County Commissioners.
If it's a citizen task force, we ask that citizens without a financial bias, interest, or conflict of interest be appointed to this task force. And thank you. And
so there's a yes and no about that. Again, I don't have a problem with the people who are directly affected by the rules a regulatory body is going to make or recommend. The organizations that are affected by the rules should have a say. They should have a stake. It shouldn't just be citizens of like the completely unrelated to the building industry. I don't get that perspective. Wanting only the activists as opposed to the ones being acted upon. I don't get that either, because wanting to make rules that are functional, that think about the level of economic impact, the jobs, that's why you have the builders involved in all this process. But I totally agree with having the builders not be the majority on the board. I mean, that's how you make that work. they bring their practical knowledge and expertise and pushback against unfair encroachment upon what they do. But you want a bunch of other people who really understand the problems and are going to, you know, seek to find ways to solve the problems. And there are problems, loads of problems. Now, it's up to you to decide as a citizen. Ultimately, do you think that the people who are pushing back are, you know, anti-business, as Kelvin says, that they are against all growth? I think some of them absolutely are. Others, as I think Dara is a more honest broker in all this, is, you know, just wants not to see all of the landscape laid waste. You know, that they don't want overdevelopment or irresponsible development. We see a lot of that in Escambia County, you know, same thing. So anyway, there's a lot to the conversation, and I'm really hoping that they figure this out today in a fairly amicable way, and in terms of who's going to be on the task force. And I really hope, and I'm fairly optimistic about this, that the reforms that are going to be recommended and then voted upon do make things better. I would love to see this happen in Escambia County, too. They're doing a land development code rewrite in the city of Pensacola. The county, Escambia County, needs it, too. You know, these are problems. They've been a problem for a long time. 555 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Have you recently been involved in a car wreck? Well, if so, we can help.
That's right. At Frank Buys Junk Cars, we buy junk cars in any condition. Wreck, crash, smash, bash, on fire, put out. Frank Buys Junk Cars. Call today. Get paid today.
Frank got me $400 for my junk car.
Buys Junk Cars. Frank Buys Junk Cars.
850-525-2035. Frank Buys Junk Cars.
Investing in times like these can be scary if you don't have the right person at the helm of your finances. Armada Advisors will put you on the right path for success. This Monday, after the Pensacola Morning News at 9, join Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors to find a better way you can successfully invest your money and enjoy your retirement. Join them this Monday, right after the Pensacola Morning News at 9.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Local talk during your morning and afternoon drive. Local news every hour. On News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Well, you know, it's like I always say, it ain't government work if you don't have to do it twice.
Good morning, 5:57 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Somebody else says on a text here, 437-1620, don't you think that the builders have long had too much influence on this, especially in picking, you know, putting campaign funding in to pick who is going to wind up being the elected official? Yeah, and that's a concern. I definitely see that in Escambia County, and I think you'd see that in the prior board in Santa Rosa County. I don't think you see it as much with this board. In fact, it's kind of has much gone the other way. One of the problems if the boards or the recommendations are not kind of fair to all or inclusive of all the voices, then they don't have the kind of long-term buy-in and legitimacy you need to avoid, let's say, a all-out turf war where, for example, the builders or some of them come back after the fact and, you know, go on the warpath against all the incumbents. You don't want that either. It's a complicated conversation. And by the way, I will always, always cherish people who call in or text in and disagree with me or want to remind me of things. I appreciate that. It's a fuller, better conversation. So, you know, if you think I'm missing it or inadequate or unfair, text me, 437-1620. That never bothers me. David Wayne is, in fact, I love it. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Israel is releasing 600 Palestinian prisoners in exchange for the bodies of four dead Israeli hostages. Hamas gave the bodies to the Red Cross in Gaza overnight as part of the Israeli ceasefire agreement. Buses carrying the prisoners were seen leaving the prison in the occupied West Bank. shortly after. And the FDA has approved a new smartwatch safety feature. Google says the agency cleared the loss of pulse detection system for the Pixel Watch 3. That means that could be available by the end of next month. That feature asks a watch user if they're okay if it stops detecting a pulse.
Creepy, but maybe it saves lives.
You're listening to News Radio.